I'd stay in the garden with him, though the night around me be falling. But he bids me go through the voice of war. His voice to me is calling, and he walks with me, and he talks with me.
Let's hum that chorus as Pam comes up.
Enjoy that for a moment. I'll get my act together. Just enjoy that. What's amazing is how many of you are smiling and how many of you just simply are not. It's a scary thing, you not smiling. I need a mustache. Dana. Oh, where's Dana? Rebecca. Yes. It's Rebecca, right? I had one slide last time that I didn't get to use. It was the sunset. If you eventually, when you get to it, that would be kind of fun, I think. A couple of things I want to say is thank you for singing God of the Mountain. That is one of my absolute favorites, and it's hard to know how to sing it. It's not really that complicated. It was like they decided on that page they were going to save space, so it's really not a complicated song, but they make it complicated. And I love that song because it speaks of where I come from, the mountains and the hills and that luring. How many fishermen? Do we have any fishermen here? Do we have any fly fishermen here? Oh, my gosh. What do you guys do for fun? What do you do? Fly fishing? No? No fishing? Well, if you notice at the end, I come from big fly fishing territory. I have a cottage on Rangeley Lake. Fanny Crosby, Fly Woman Crosby. Anyway, I can't think when I can't see you. Very, very big. And that whole thing at the end of that song about lure us on, if any of you ever done any fishing, you know, you cast that lure, and then it's not just like you're going to catch the fish, you're trying to draw that fish out. And then you're drawing that fish. And that sense that God is kind of always kind of drawing us on and luring. I love when you can just take that song and you just keep playing with it, and you can actually just kind of go to town on that at the end. You can just do it. So I really want to thank you very, very much. And of course, in the garden. Does anybody want to take a guess of the song we just finished in the garden, which so many people know? What garden the author of that had in mind? What garden is that? Everybody says that, and that's not true. So, what? Close. You can look this up. Very close. The author, whose name I'm not picking up right now because I wasn't planning on saying this. Who was it? Austin Miles. There's a marvelous story about Austin Miles. He was a photographer, and he was in his dark room, probably escaping from his wife because he was having his quiet time in his dark room. And he was reading the story of the resurrection and Mary meeting Jesus in the garden. And from that story, he had a vision in his dark room, which is kind of interesting in itself. And the words to that song came like that, and you can read about it. And it's not like the hymn storybooks or whatever. And he has this vision of walking with Jesus in the resurrection garden. So often when we sing it, we get kind of sad and nostalgic, but it's actually a resurrection garden, which for me shifts that just a little bit. And that, remember when Jesus says to Mary, "Don't touch me. I have not yet gone to the Father." There is that yearning in the song. You know, "Don't touch me. I haven't gone to the Father yet." But he walks with me, but then he says, "I have to go because I have to go on into the world and tell the world about this resurrection." So I just want to throw that out to you. It's not the Garden of Gethsemane. It's the other garden. You guys totally wigged out by these glasses yet? I notice you're still a little puzzled. You're a little concerned about this. Okay, let's see if it happens, if it gets any better. Does that get any better? All right. Title of today's talk is Seeing Jesus. Now you get it. Seeing Jesus, or having a vision for the kingdom. One of the very last parts I didn't get to last night, which I want to speak of at the moment, is that throughout this week, I am going to be inviting you to utilize all of your senses to sense God. I'm going to invite all of our senses to sense God, not just for our own pleasure, but so that we might then invite others to become attentive to God in their lives. So I'm trying to give you things that then we can practice here at camp and things that we can then take home. A lot of that stuff is from the Nudge book that I had mentioned. He uses it in a different kind of way than I'm going to use it, but that sense of we are not just brains that walk around on this planet. We are whole bodies and whole people, and I think that that's a huge message for CFO. So I'm beginning today with seeing Jesus. Seeing Jesus. And I have a short scripture. And while many scriptures would apply to what I'm going to talk about today, I'm going to read from John 14, verses 18 and 19. And in this, Jesus is talking to his disciples, comforting his disciples because he knows he's going to leave. He's talking about promising, sending the Holy Spirit. And this is what he says in John 14, verses 18 and 19. He says, "I will not leave you as orphans. I will come to you. Before long, the world will not see me anymore, but you will see me." Before long, the world will not see me anymore, but you will see me. Because I live, you also will live. Ponder that. Some of you have been wondering about these bells that I gave you, so I want to give you a little context for them and then invite you how to use them. Emily Dickinson, whom many of us have heard of. Emily Dickinson, a poet, a writer, wonderful letter writer, wrote a letter to her brother in 1851 that has come down to us and has been a delight for many. She wrote this to her brother. "There was quite an excitement in the village Monday evening We were all startled by a violent church bell ringing and thinking of nothing but fire. We rushed out in the street to see. The sky was a beautiful red, bordering on crimson, and rays of gold-pink color were constantly shooting off from a kind of sun in the center. People were alarmed at this beautiful phenomenon, supposing that fires somewhere else were coloring the sky. The exhibition lasted for nearly 15 minutes, and the streets were full of people wondering and admiring. Father happened to see it among the very first, and he rang the bell himself to call attention to it. Emily Dickinson's father was quite a character. He rang the fire bell so people would come out and watch the sunset. So I invite you, gave you a little bell. We're going to talk about it more throughout the week, but this little bell, when you see God doing something, when God is unmistakable, ring your bell. Or just ring your bell to remind you that you're supposed to be looking. It's a device. It's a reminder device. Or if I'm going too long and it's time to move on, I mean, who knows? We could use those for all kinds of things. But ring your bell and notice and pay attention. I had actually already gave my bell away. And that's fine. If you give your bell away, I can get you another bell. In fact, I've put a few extras up here and behind. I was at the coffee shop this morning and met Audrey. If anybody met Audrey? Audrey with the lovely British accent? Oh, I met Audrey. So I got to talking. And she was really concerned about the bears in the woods when she went for a run. So I gave her my bell. I said, if you just put this on here, it's enough noise. They have very good hearing, Audrey. You don't have to be afraid. And so she goes, really? I'm like, yeah, it'll be enough. Believe me, it'll be enough of a bell. You don't need to be anxious in the woods. Just go ring. Put it on your shoe. You'll be all set. So anyway, there's a lot of uses for these bells. A lot of uses. Do you join me in this moment of openness? I invite you to pray this with me as you're able. God be in my head and in my understanding. God be in my eyes and in my looking. God be in my mouth and in my speaking. God be in my heart and in my serving. God be at my end and at my departing. Do you believe in a present tense Jesus? Yes, thank you, Jeannie. Awesome! I could get all kinds of ways to snurk you into like getting behind the defenses of that obvious question, but I don't have time. The key challenge for us as Christians is to take the present tense Jesus as seriously as we take the historical Jesus. The Jesus that we hear in the gospel stories. We have a lot of songs that talk about Jesus in the present tense. And this is such a wonderful singing group. I'll throw that out there. What are some songs, present tense Jesus songs? He lives, right? He lives, Christ Jesus lives today, right? He walks with me and talks with me along life's narrow way, right? He lives, not he lived, he lives. Perfect. What else we got? Jesus is the rock, and how's that one go? He's my, that one, okay. Talk about Jesus, he's my rock, right? Because it'd be he, it's he's, it's a contraction. It could be is, could be was. I think it's is. It's is, right? Okay. What else we got? Which comes from that verse that I read, right? Because he lives, I can face tomorrow. Because he lives. All fear is gone because I know he holds the future and life is worth the living just because he lives. Yeah. Jesus loves me. Did we just sing that one? Yeah, Jesus loves me. There's lots of things in the present tense, and it's so important for us, and it's so easy for us to slip into the historical Jesus and not always remember him and to see him. To see him, and I'll put these back on if I have to. To see him in the present. How can we identify the face of Jesus when he shows it to us? How can you see Jesus? Kind of easier said than done, isn't it? We see Jesus. By the way, I ask a lot of questions, some of which you might actually answer out loud, some of which you won't. You know, some of which if I'm really looking for an answer out loud and I don't hear one, I might pick somebody whose name I've learned off a name tag, but I don't like to do that. I don't like to put people on the spot. But and then sometimes they're clearly rhetorical, except the kids don't know they're rhetorical, so then they answer, which I love. So don't worry. You can always like just answer. I can roll with them. Here's a legendary story about Karl Barth, the famous theologian. You'll enjoy this. So Karl Barth is riding a streetcar in his hometown of Basel, Switzerland, and a gentleman gets on the streetcar. He's a tourist. He sits down next to Barth, and Barth says, "Are you new to the city?" And the tourist says, "Yes." And he said, "Is there anything in particular you would like to see in the city?" And the tourist says, "Yes, I would like to meet the famous Swiss theologian Karl Barth. Do you know him?" And Barth says, "As a matter of fact, I do know him. I give him a shave every morning." The tourist gets off the streetcar, rushes back to his hotel, and tells everybody, "I met Karl Barth's barber today." One of the pervasive challenges of us living in the faith and wanting to live in this present tense faith is our inability to recognize Jesus. We often don't recognize, or maybe sometimes we'll recognize him like in the past tense. We'll be able to look back and say, "I bet you that was Jesus." The disciples, don't feel bad. The disciples were fairly clueless at this. It seems almost the closer his friends are to him, the harder it is sometimes to recognize him. But it's what we practice here. Can you think of some reasons why it is so hard, though, for us to see Jesus? To see. We get distracted. Somebody calls it the paradox of plenty. We have so much going on that we drown. We're just drowning in overstimulation and just drowning in stuff. That's why CFO can be really good for that. Some other things that maybe it would be hard for us to recognize Jesus. Yeah, we're looking for the negative, and we don't always expect it because that was positive. Because, and what's interesting about that is we find what we're looking for. Exactly. Find what we're looking for. Isn't it amazing? Because does anybody have any negative people in their lives? You might, you know, feel free to limit your contact, at least till you're really, really grounded. They can find the negative like nobody's business. And then you, who were having a fairly okay day, start to doubt yourself. Gee, I thought it was okay. I thought life was going along pretty well. Yeah. Any others? Why it's so hard for us to recognize Jesus? Egocentrism, yes. We are the center of the universe, right? And we're kind of, that's part of our sin nature, really, is we really feel that need to be the center of the universe. Anybody ever got on the phone, and as soon as you get on the phone, what happens? If you have small children.
They dance on the table.
What? They dance on the table, they decide to climb to the top shelf. They are doing something, and it took me a long time to realize what they're really telling you is, I am still the center of your universe, right? Because you're talking to somebody else, and my place is now in question. Are you really? And I've even heard people say that their pets do it too.
Oh my gosh.
Which is interesting. I don't have any pets, so I have to go that one. But yeah. And we thought, as a people, I mean, how long was it before we were really willing to reckon with the fact that perhaps the sun did not go around the earth? So we stand a long line of wanting to be in the center of the universe. And that's hard for us, and particularly in prayer, I talked about last night, you know, not just kind of get God to, you know, get God's attention. Here I am, but just to turn our attention to God takes us out of the center and puts God in the center. That's hard, because since we were born, we were the center of everybody's attention. It's a tough transition to move ourselves out of the center. I talked last night about the difference, right at the end there, the difference between commitment and surrender. I think that's one of the things that makes it hard for us to see Jesus moving, because when we're committed, then we're committed to an idea of Jesus, we're committed to a certain something, but as soon as you surrender, you open up possibilities for Jesus to be something that you hadn't anticipated, for him to manifest in a way that perhaps you weren't ready for. It's giving up a little bit of yourself. Any others? Yeah, Sharon. Yeah, we don't. Yeah, we forget the history. We forget being grounded, where we come from, how to look. I said last night, what are some of the signs that God uses? And while he doesn't always use the same necessarily, he is trying to always get our attention. Yeah, that's a great point. We don't know either the history, the church history, our personal history. That's why I love, how many of you keep a journal? Anybody here keep a journal? Or keep a journal intermittently? Beau Bottomley, Linda Heesch, there's a number of CFO speakers who have really talked a lot about the power of keeping journals. I keep a journal in and out. Like, I can't say I keep one all the time, but there I go through seasons of my life, and I encourage you as a spiritual discipline, I don't know if Tanya will talk about this, about keeping a journal for the 40 days of Lent, for the 30 days of summer, or the 20 days, or how many you get at your house, you know, for Advent, even just for a season. And don't write down everything you did that way. That will kill most people who are not into journaling. But Linda Heesch talks about going on a God hunt. Just find one thing in the day where you could say, God was doing something, or I sense God was doing, or maybe God was doing something. Just one thing. One thing. And that will teach you how to reflect on your life. I had said to Sam, talked about Sam last night. Sam goes through seasons where he keeps a journal because it keeps him paying attention. It's definitely a way to work about that. God appears when we don't expect. God appears among people that we don't expect. One of the interesting things Len Sweet observes about the resurrected Jesus, he always seemed to appear to the disciples. When he would show up, he'd be hungry or wounded. And Jesus is to be found among the wounded and the broken and the suffering. So if you spend your time with folks who are doing great, it may be a little bit hard sometimes to see Jesus. I work among people who are very wealthy. So I have a particular challenge to help them see Jesus. Because in many ways, in the most obvious kind of external ways, they're doing okay without him. Jesus is found among the wounded and the hungry. And then as I spoke briefly about my black bear story last night, do you really want to see Jesus? That's the one that I struggle with. I mean, I say I want to see Jesus, but do I really want to see Jesus? And how can we point out Jesus to other folks in our lives when we don't haven't seen Jesus ourselves? I love this from Proverbs 8, 32 to 35. This is wisdom calling to us. She says, "And so, my children, listen to me, for all who follow my ways are joyful. Listen to my instruction and be wise. Don't ignore it. Joyful are those who listen to me, watching me daily at my gates, watching for me outside my home. For whoever finds me finds life and receives favor from the Lord." Watching. watching. Here's some ideas for those of you who really want to see Jesus at work, to see Jesus this week. I will tell you that on the back of the salmon-colored paper, did anybody then go back and read the salmon-colored paper? Thank you. One of the things that it talked about, which I always try to mention, so I was so pleased to see it, the difference between expectations and expectancy. Expectations are, I would like A, B, and C to happen. Expectancy is, I don't know what's going to be happening, but it's going to be good. My son, Ben, and his wife, Molly, just got married on July 3rd, and any of you who have ever been involved in weddings, that can be fraught with expectations. Matter of fact, don't ever talk to a minister about weddings, or maybe an accompanist, because like we are the most jaded on weddings. You know, Godzilla brides, God bless their Zilla wives. You know, I mean brides. I mean, they're just the expectations. They get out of control. Does anybody know anything about what I'm talking about with bridezillas? Does anybody got a clue? Okay. They want, in fact, I was talking to our wedding coordinator at Sugarloaf the other day, to Julia, and she says, you know, they asked me if the sun could set sooner. Okay? I could talk a whole talk about bridezillas. Expectations. I want this to happen. I want this to happen. I want it to be 68 degrees. I want it to be sunny. I want to sit in this row. I want the food to be this warm. And we can do that in our lives about all kinds of things. We have things, and if they don't happen, then we're disappointed. Even here at camp, there's things that you know, like you wanted to see this person, and you wanted to see that person, and you wanted to do this thing, and you wanted to be able to go swimming here, and we get this list, this laundry list, and we think if we get our laundry list met, then we will be happy. And it's not true, and it rarely happens. But if you say, you know, I'm going to meet God this week, that's a prayer God can answer. So expectancy. So that's one thing in terms of us seeing Jesus. If you can shift that from your expectation to just being expectant, to having expectancy, you will go far. Another thing for kind of seeing Jesus is to remember that Jesus is not hiding. If anything, we're hiding. But God's not hiding. Okay? In fact, it's the actual continuous omnipresence of God that is so kind of hard for us to grasp. And Gandhi, well-known, quote, so much truth. If you don't find God in the very next person you meet, it is a waste of time looking for him further. Anybody need to hear that again? Sometimes I repeat myself just because I just think it's not my words, but other people's, because they're really good. If you don't find God in the very next person you meet, it is a waste of time looking for him further. One of my favorite CFO songs, which is number 250, I Love You with the Love of the Lord. Oh, I love you with the love of the Lord. I don't know how you guys do that here or if you do it in a particular way. Do you guys have a particular way that you do that or do that in rhythms? Yeah? How do we do it here, Winnie? And you look at each other? Oh, I hope we do that this week because that's what I love. I love you with the love of the Lord. Yeah. And you look at somebody. I love you with the love of the Lord. And you look and you look. And what is the next line? I can see in you the beauty of my King, and I love you with the love of the Lord. It is so incredibly intimidating. And it's so powerful. If I just came to camp and just did that one song, I'd be like, yeah, I'm good. There's so many people through whom you might see God. I was sitting with Rosemary at, where's Rosemary? Is she here? Thank you. There you go. So many people. I was sitting with Rosemary and at breakfast, and I was asking her about some of the work that she does with hearing impaired, and I would call that, you didn't say it, but I would call that your deaf ministry. I mean, there's a ministry in that that's pretty amazing. I had a prayer group a number of years ago. For a while, when our camp was right outside of New York City, we had a pretty significant ministry with the deaf population. We had a young woman, Allison Cliff, who used to be Allison something else. I only ever knew as Cliff. What was her maiden name?
Stewart.
They're saying Allison Stewart. How many of you know Allison Stewart? All right. How many of you know Allison Cliff? Yeah. Love them. Well, Allison, working at the School for the Deaf, would bring a number of hearing impaired folks out to camp. And there was one year in which, I don't know how it happened, but I ended up leading a deaf prayer group. So in the prayer group, they were deaf, and I had one or two interpreters, Allison and maybe another woman, and myself. So why am I facilitating the prayer group? It's beyond me, but it was such an incredible gift. Because all the things you think you know about prayer groups don't work. Like, let's sit here in quiet and close our eyes. Can't close your eyes? I mean, as soon as you close your eyes, they're like, what happens? Nothing. There's no communication. So it's one of the most powerful moments for me of praying with our eyes open and praying really looking at one another. Because that would be how you would hear the prayers. And to see Jesus just kind of pop into that still gives me the chills. Maybe Rosemary even has some stories. I don't know. But it was amazing to me to have to look at someone in the face, in the eyes, while they were talking to the Lord. Because what do we do in our prayer groups? Right? Close our eyes, and then somebody talks, and you're not even sure who is speaking unless you peek, if you don't know them very well, and you figure out whose lips are moving, and then at least you know who we're talking about. And, oh, come on, don't tell me you've never opened your eyes on prayer group. Or if they're peeking particularly quietly and you don't know that you actually do a little bit of lip reading, you're kind of figuring out. To see Jesus, that was one of those moments when I see Jesus. And just to hear folks pray, if you've spent any time in the deaf community, kind of the concreteness of those prayers. It's not just a hearing thing, it's a culture thing, it's a thinking thing, it's how we perceive the world. It was a totally cross-cultural experience for me to see Jesus. So powerful. So powerful. So looking for Jesus in people. And you can practice that this week. Look for Jesus in people. And what's nice about CFO is we have a little bit of a trust community going on here, so it might be a little bit easier for you to see Jesus with the people around you. The other one is slowing down. I know Tanya's talked about this, so I'm not going to belabor it too much, but to slow down is such a gift in the art of seeing Jesus. CFO is my spiritual barometer. CFO is a busy day, but it's a balanced day if you do it. And I challenge you this week to really slow down and by really engaging in the daily rhythm. All of it. You have 51 weeks a year to structure your own lives around your work schedule, around your family, around your hobby, around your retirement, whatever. But 1 week to open yourselves to the external structure of something that we believe has been a gift to us, intended to actually slow us down and help us become aware of the kingdom. 1 week devoted to God's structure in this format. Having said that, the hardest part for me, everybody has a part of the week, the day that's really hard. Why don't we all say it all at once? I'm going to say it on three,
And on three, you're just going to confess to the Lord, like, what's the hardest part of the CFO day for you, okay? And we're not going to judge it. We're just going to, and I'm going to step away from the mic. Well, no. All right. Ready? You know which part that is, right? No. Okay, if you haven't got one, you'll have to decide what to say. I'm not going to solve that problem. Okay. Ready? One, two, three. Morning meditation. Yes, I heard somebody out there. Morning meditation. Why? Because it's in the morning. Why? Because of FOMO, because I'm afraid I might miss something at night. Morning meditation starts the night before. When does Sabbath start? Sundown when? Friday, sundown, to when? Saturday, sundown, right? We have this bizarre thing in Christian life where we think the day begins when we get up. The day actually begins the night before. And that's true in Jewish life. So you think of God's life and rhythm. The day actually starts the evening before. And when you think about it, this solves a lot of problems. Because you don't have to wake up in the morning and say, oh, man, you've already thought about it the evening before. A new day starts at sunset in the Jewish thought process, not sunrise. And what that does is it also releases us to know that when we go to bed at night, God is moving. It's not 9 o'clock. That's the thing to make sure I stop. I'll finish this up. So, God is moving all night long to get ready for you to wake up. His day started the night before. Isn't that interesting? For me, that cool. That also should help you get up for church on Sunday morning. That's all I'm going to say about that. No, just kidding. My Sunday mornings don't start Sunday morning. They start Saturday evening because I have to make choices of what I'm going to do in the evening so that I'm at my best for Sunday morning. So you can pray for me for morning meditation because that's one that's really hard for me. That one's really, really, really hard. Mostly because not getting up so much, I joke about that. It's mostly because I can't just wake up and then go sit down. You'll see me standing up a lot because if I sit down, like, I'm going to just fall back asleep. Or I'm just kind of waking up all those cricks and crinkles from the night before. I wish rhythms like happened at 7:30 first, like so you could just wake up. So actually, I had a beautiful morning meditation this morning with Audrey in the coffee shop. That was a divine appointment. It was really lovely. Do you want to finish serious or finish funny? All right, here you go. Here's a story told. Thank you, those who speak first. This is a great story, and it's happened in many forms, but my friend Lynn Sweet tells this story about slowing down, okay? So Farmer John lives on a quiet rural highway, Farmer John, in Maine. But as time goes by, the traffic starts building up, right? Because people want to get where they want to go. And the traffic is getting so heavy, and people are just going way, way, way too fast. And so Farmer John is losing like 5, 6, 7 chickens a day because people are just driving too fast. So he calls the sheriff's office, and he says, you have got to do something about all these flatlanders driving so fast and killing off all my chickens. And the sheriff said, what do you want me to do? Now, you have to remember, where I live, there are no, like, local police. You call the county sheriff, okay, if you want something done. Forget the local police. There isn't such a thing, right? That's why we take care of it ourselves. But occasionally, you need the sheriff. And Farmer John says, I don't care. Just do something about them flatlanders. So the next day, the sheriff got the county workers to put out a sign. It says, slow school crossing. Big yellow sign, right? 3 days later, Farmer John calls the sheriff. You have got to do something about these flatlanders. The school crossing sign has just made them speed up. Of course, now you have to decide where they're from, right? So the sheriff sent the county workers out again, and they put up a different sign. Slow, children at play. There is a colon, by the way, not slow children. Slow colon children at play. Anyway, so that really sped him up. And Farmer John called and called and called for weeks, and he's harassing the sheriff, and the sheriff's tired of it. The sheriff's got real things to deal with, like roadkill. That's another story. And he says to the sheriff, he says, your signs are doing no good. Can I put up my own sign? Sure thing. Go put up your own sign. So, sheriff stopped getting calls from Farmer John. No more calls from Farmer John. About a month later, a very curious sheriff decides to call Farmer John. How's the problem with those drivers? Did you put up your sign? Oh, yep, sure did. Not one of my chickens has been killed since, but I gotta go. Now the sheriff's very curious. So, on a slow day, and there's a lot of slow days, he decides he's going to drive out and see Farmer John and check out this sign. Maybe it's something he can use, you know, in other places in the county. So he gets out there, and he took one look at this big, huge sign, and his jaw hit the ground. You ready? Nudist colony, colon. Slow down and watch for the chickens. You got to figure out a way to slow down. I mean, whatever it takes, whatever it takes. Slow down. Oh, we could sing. Slow down, you move too fast. You gotta make the morning last. Just tricking down the cobblestones, looking for fun and feeling groovy. Da 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 da. Feeling groovy. Feel groovy, everybody. Have a great day.